Closed captioning of this program is brought to you in part by Pariah Pickups. What you want, what you need, what you love. Visit PariahPickups.com and at Pariah Pickups on Instagram. And LoudTracks.com. Visit LoudTracks.com to get your favorite band merchandise and purchase a Jeremy White Podcast t-shirt to support the channel.
The Jeremy White Podcast. Tuesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Dang. Bonjour. Welcome. That is correct.
By the way, I got a couple of bills to throw at you. Hold on a second.
What are you wearing right now? What?
Dirty honey, dude.
Dude, I got the dirty. I'm rocking the merch today, man. Look at that.
What jacket is that, too, you got on?
It's a John Varvatos jacket.
I have that one, dude.
It's the good one. It's got the, you know, it's a...
Double-breasted
buttons. It's, you know, it's got the crosses. You're
dressed just like me right now.
I wanted to dress the part.
I love it, dude. Awesome.
And the hat. Look at us.
Yeah. Man. Sick. I
got a St. Louis Blues shirt on. It's very...
Why aren't you rocking the hats?
You know what, Mitch? You're just channeling me when I'm in the studio.
That's right. I'm like Terry Kath. Got a Terry Kath guitar blue shirt on. Come on.
Oh, man.
Your eyes are very blue right now.
The white is blue?
Your eyes.
Oh, my eyes are. Well, that's my color.
I bet you tell that to all the boys.
Look at that. I know. But good day, Mark. We, of course, know each other through Brent Fitz and stuff. And Jeremy here is Montreal's number one on-air personality. Oh, winner of 19 rating books in a row, motherfucker.
Thank you.
Yes.
You always do this to me. You always build me up. It's like,
great style for radio.
Thanks. Yeah. I know it helps. I have the face for radio, so you know.
Didn't your mom buy you the Dirty Honey shirt?
Yeah, so my mom bought me the t-shirt. She saw you guys open up for GNR in Vegas, and I was supposed to go to the show with her, but we were in our ratings period, and my boss wouldn't let me take off, so she ended up bringing her best friend. And they had the time of their lives, and you guys were like the highlight for her at the show. She's like, man, the band that opened up, they were so good. And she got me the shirt, and so.
We had completely different experiences that night because I was like, it was Vegas. There wasn't a lot of people like showing up early for the opening act. And I was like, ugh. And he was,
but hey.
I was like, oh God. And then he was like, I'm having a fucking time of my life. It was just two ends of the spectrum.
It's tough to look out and see a half empty sort of vibe. But I decided I made a contract with myself about 20 seconds into the show. I was like, can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear. And
fuck them. You know what? I'm going to make sure that whoever was here is going to be like, you missed it. So, you know?
Well, dude, that's it. It's like, I can imagine if you're you're in the support slot and you're opening up for a band like Guns N' Roses. I mean, obviously, people are going to be standing, getting the beer, buying their Slash merch and all that crap.
But it's, take it.
Especially in... Yeah, exactly. People are still on the strip trying to score some blow. It's, you know, it's Vegas, right? So you want to give the fans that did show up to see the support act, you know, perform, like as if you're playing in front of the Enorma Dome, you know? You got to put it on.
Totally.
Yeah.
Enorma Dome, dude. I want to play there.
Yeah.
Enorma Dome. It's the best venue in the world.
So, right, Jer. Launch us off.
This new album, well, I guess we're already going, so why not? I mean, you know, talk about this new album that's coming out. We heard a little bit of a teaser of it. I didn't want to waste it. I want to wait till I get my CD or the vinyl and have an enjoyment on a Friday night, listen to it in its entirety. But so far from what we've heard, it's Dirty Honey and it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I've got the whole thing in front of me and it sounds great. Let's just say
thanks,
that.
Man. Yeah.
We weren't trying to fool anyone.
Yeah. We didn't want you to think it was Queen.
Yeah. I love Queen.
So I have to say, there's a couple of times I said, that sounds like the Rolling Stones to me, but it is still brand new and fresh and Dirty Honey.
Sick, yeah.
Which one gave you the Stones vibe?
Yeah, that's
it. Was I think it was it Tied Up or Take Me to Heaven? Hold on, let me listen.
Probably, yeah. There's some BGs on the one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was Tied Up or Take My Hand. It was the third or fourth one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Tied Up.
Yeah. No, we did it here in LA again. Well, for the first time in LA, but we did it again with Nick DiDia, and you know, we just wanted to really work on songs and. Had we done it when we were supposed to originally go to Australia and record for the second time, I think we would have came out with a worse product, you know, and
right.
The pandemic gave us a little more time to work on songs. And
Well, talk to me just quickly about that. You started off with an EP just to sort of give fans a taster, and then you went off and did the full length. Why not go with the full length right up front and say, all right, folks, here we are. We're new. Here's 10 songs and let's go. What was sort of the game plan?
We literally didn't have enough tunes at the time to do a full length. So, and not having a label, I think the initial push was to put out some songs, see if we can get some label interest, which we ultimately did. But then as When I'm Gone started climbing the charts, it turned into why, you know, we're doing this without the labels. Why not just maintain ownership of all your stuff? And why would we sign it all away now? It doesn't make any sense. You know, we've gotten so far without them.
Right.
Fuck them. You know?
Right.
Why? There's no reason to go that route anymore. It's clear as day what you can do without them. So, and then obviously we had to do some more writing, which we took a lot of time to do on tour and, you know, during the pandemic. And I think we're pretty proud of what we came up with so far.
I'm super proud. I run around going, I'm killing.
Fucking right, as you should. Guys, talk about the Dirty Honey sound a little bit.
What'd you say?
I was going to say, you know, talk about the Dirty Honey sound a little bit, because, you know, Mitch and I, we talk about this a lot, where on the pop side of music, everybody's going 80s. And on the rock side, everybody's going back to the 70s, you know, less is more, you know, analog kind of rock and roll sound. Mm-hmm. Where and why did you guys make that decision to sound like that?
Well, that's always where our heart has been. Mm-hmm. And that's always what we were doing when we were in the trenches playing the crappy clubs. You know, when you struggle for so long, there is a little period of maybe like, you know, overthinking it a little and adding a few more flavors. But really lucky, we already had the gem under our nose and just sort of didn't know it, which was When I'm Gone. And mm-hmm. so when our manager heard that song, finally a proper recording, I mean, he straight up was like, I can make that. I'm going to make that. I think he was like, I'm going to make that a number one. And you know,
he said, quote, that's a number one song if we do it right.
Right. Okay. So that sort of galvanized us to be like, this sound that comes most natural to us and is us, is we can do it. You know, we don't have to.
I will say I kind of fought for that more than anything. I knew his playing style, and what I liked most about his playing style was the nuance that sort of reminds me of, to your point, Mitch, like, he doesn't play, he's a much better player than Keith Richards. That's right. Not a headline. but Keith's playing is full of nuance that I love, and so is like Rich Robinson and Joe Perry and Jimmy Page. And John has, when the personality sort of shines through in the playing, that's the performance of his I like the most. And we were kind of writing stuff that wasn't giving him that freedom to just play.
Yeah, right. It was like we had written some songs that even sometimes people message me like, hey, man, what happened to this song? I'd be like, that's gone. But it was when we performed them that I realized, I was like, oh, there's no room for the swag. There's no room for the swagger. There's no room for those little fills.
That's what it's all about.
You know,
right.
It's like no disrespect. It's like a muse type of structure where you're like, oh, I have to just do this. And so every night when we play it, increasingly was like, I don't like fit in with my own thing.
Right.
We were with a producer at one point that really tried to put us into a box of like strict performance.
Oh, so bad.
And
who was that producer? Can you reveal the name?
No, because he's a great producer, and in his lane, he's very successful. He's just wrong guy.
He produces a lot of the. His name's Bob Marlette. He produces a lot of.
Okay. Oh, I know Bob.
Yeah, we know Bob. Yeah.
Bob's great. He's just you know, it's round peg square hole. And when we sort of mutually parted ways as kind of like a, this isn't working. I remember the last thing he said to me. He was like, "Listen, there's something here, like just
Don't well, listen, there's nothing wrong in saying that. I mean, it's like saying, well, Mutt Lange working with Kiss would be kind of funky. It probably would be. It doesn't mean Kiss sucks, and it doesn't mean Mutt Lange sucks. It just means that combination
Yeah, and I also feel like, you know, a producer can really put a stamp on a band in a good way or a bad way. If the producer's going to go in and elevate your performance and take you to the next level versus trying to put you into a box that they have in their mind of what you should be, which is complete opposite of what you want to be, it's not fun for anybody.
No.
So to wrap it sort of back around, it's like we had When I'm Gone under our belt this whole time.
And recorded it once with Bob, actually.
Didn't come out,
but
quite
it lost
right.
all the nuance that we all love in the performance.
Well, what do you mean by that? Was it like too robotic, the performance? Yeah. Like,
he has a thing, and the way he does it is like it's very commercial new rock,
right?
So you tighten everything up,
wanted it all on the grid, he wanted it all like
gridded out, grid.
And that's not rock and roll. You want it,
I've never played so in time in my life, really. I was like, whoa. Because I feel like I killed it. He was like, okay, you want to do it again in time? And I was like, well, you know. But
Because there's got to be some feel. And there's a perfection in the imperfection as well on music.
In what we love. Yeah, exactly.
You listen to.
And that's not necessarily, you know, Bob's had a ton of success with a lot of different artists and his thing works. But it was when Nick was like, you got to get these performances just right with the nuance. And sometimes, you know, he specifically would go back and be like, man, I think there's like an upstroke there that shouldn't be there. And he's like, it's cool, man. It's loose.
Yeah. And John, especially as a guitar player, you know, you want to have the little, you know, grace notes inside the performance. And you want the chick-a-chickas and you want all the string noise here and there.
And there's some fun little mistakes on all the records. The only time I'll go in and be like, hey, we should fix that, is if, like, I kind of botch it, like, the first time around.
Right.
Like, I don't want the intro of the tune to be, like, wrong, you know?
Right.
But other than that, once we get cooking, it's like, let's get the performance happening. It was a really good blessing and an affirmative moment for them. Right. You already have a hit and you sound like you. And so coming into this moment where this is happening, it's like, we're just being ourselves. And that's the best part. And we're doing what comes naturally to us. And
right.
It's really easy. It's much easier to double down on that than it is to try to double down on what you're guessing might be cool, you know?
Let me ask you this, John. You also play drums and bass. Why, sort of, for the band, have you decided that you're going to be featured on guitar and not do the other stuff? And as you're recording, do you sort of turn to the drummer and go, oh, I could do that better. What is he doing?
He can probably sing it better, too, but he's not saying it.
I could sing it better. What the hell is he doing?
Here's the deal. Corey's a drummer. If we're to compare each other, he's a drummer, and I'm just like a guy who owns a drum set.
Gotcha.
It's not even close.
You're the hobbyist.
Mitch's buddy Brent actually came up to me and he was like, Corey's like a real drummer. He's like practicing like some crazy jazz shit.
And I'm
he's like really a good Superman. He's like got a Superman cape, and I'm like on the street with like no shoes. Yeah.
Right. And that's also the relationship that I feel to John about playing guitar.
But, you know, when you're by yourself, the whole me playing drums and playing bass is just, I'm by myself. I have those things in my house. I'm such a fan of drums. I'm always paying attention to Corey. I'm always trying to pick things up. And so when I make a demo, I'll just do the basic kind of idea I have so that mainly for him, so that he can vibe on it and be like, okay, I hear, you know, I feel it more than just like a random guitar part by itself.
Yeah. Mm.
And the identity of the band Dirty Honey, the sound on my demos isn't there when it's just me playing all the instruments. It's not there. In fact, what's there is usually where I'm getting the influence is more obvious. So if I got kind of like an AC/DC-ish idea, I'm playing the AC/DC drum. Corey would never do that. And that's what gives us our sound is like him coming in, coming from the, you know, different area. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this about launching a new band, because, you know, you look at a band like Kiss or Aerosmith and they've been around for 50 years. And when a pandemic hits, they just take a year off and whatever. But you're trying to build an audience. You're trying to build a fan base, and you have this time taken out of your, moving forward. How does that affect the band, and how do you sort of get that fan base and stay engaged with people that aren't fans yet? I mean, how did you ride this out for the last year?
Well, we came up with a couple of different little interesting ideas. Certainly, there was a point during the pandemic where I just said to, we have a social media call every week, and I was like, we can't just keep posting like this time.
Here's the video.
We were in Montreal, you know, at MTL Fest or whatever. Mm-hmm. Heavy MTL, and I was like, nobody cares anymore. Nobody wants to do that. Let's do something different. And so we came up with this idea, the suitcase sessions, where we go out and perform in like unique places and film it. So that was cool. That was a fun way to waste some time. And then obviously, you know, teasing some new music and stuff. That was obviously good. But I think most importantly, the best thing you can do is do great work and write great songs and those will stand on their own no matter what, no matter when, you know, if they come 10 years from now, 5 years from now, or yesterday, a great song is a great song.
And right.
People are going to
Mark, I was reading up on you, and you know, you got a background in broadcasting and communications and marketing and all that stuff. How do you use that to your advantage as a band?
I sort of serendipitously fell into, you know, the job that I had before all this was going on was location scouting for films and TV shows. And mm-hmm. that. Yeah. You like that one?
Can you say that in the accent? Are you allowed to?
A big word like gymnasium.
Say it a little slower, please.
Serendipitously. No, but having that knowledge of, you know, locations and a filming background definitely helps when we shoot videos or any type of video content. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that he likes drums, that's my like nerd out.
It really helps too, because anytime I've ever come to him with like, what if the music video was this, it's like he's quickly like, well, that would take two cameras and we'd have to hire a stunt guy, so no, we can't do that. Like he has
yeah,
you know, he's like, and that location, there's only one of those in the area, and that costs money, you know. So,
sometimes the guys would be like, what if we shoot at, you know, the Greek Theater or whatever? I'm like, that's like 20 grand.
Yeah, someone's got to be budget conscious,
And he just knows, like, he can come up with an idea and know that it can be done with one camera,
right? Yeah,
he can know, like, oh, okay, well, I've been to this area. We can sneak in there and they won't catch us, or like, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of that knowledge where, I mean, I don't know that kind of stuff, so.
Mm. No, because I saw that, you know, you had a degree in broadcasting. I'm like, what, did this guy want to be like a radio guy or something? Or like, what was the plan?
There really wasn't one. There wasn't a plan, honestly. By then I was studying.
But were you that guy that like you applied to everything else and they turned you down and you're like, oh, communications, fuck it, let's do that.
Pretty much, honestly. I remember thinking school.
That's what that degree is, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, there was nothing. I took
to catch all.
I adamantly believe I learned more living in Italy for a semester than I did in college, learning anything in college. I think you just have a way better view of the world. You understand yourself better and what you want out of life.
Moving, same. I
just
didn't do that.
Traveling,
it's
an important part of being a cultured human being. And ultimately, that's what led me back to music, was living in Italy. So, in terms of the communications degree didn't get me any job in TV or film out here. That was literally a friend called me. He's like, I think you can do this job.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it.
It's like what my mom said. It's not what you know, it's who you know. That's really what it comes down to.
A lot of the time, those degrees aren't worth the paper they're printed on. So, you know.
No, it was a total waste.
I mean, dude, definitely, yeah.
Honestly, if I could go back and do it again, I would probably go backpack through Europe and not even go to school.
Nice.
Let's talk a little bit about the producer, Nick Dedea. He's worked with everybody. I'm just looking at his list, from Billy Talent to Bruce Springsteen to Alice Cooper to Glenn Danzig to King's X, Korn, etc. But he's been around for 30, 40 years. What does he bring to the band in terms of the sound? I mean, obviously he's got experience, but you want to create something new and fresh, and he's been around for 30 years. Can he bring the new and fresh to you? What does he do for you?
I think he is doing that.
Okay.
I Well, just based on a lot of the comments, people say that the recordings sound modern, but mm-hmm. have that
nuance.
But have that nuance and that it's like live feel.
Well, that's what I said at the beginning. It, you know, on the pop side, it's super produced electronic music, but then you listen to the rock guys and it sounds like a live performance. It sounds like a band again.
Yeah. Right. He's got a very Mike Clink and like Ted Templeman approach where he's like, I'm basically going to try to capture the band rather than put my stamp
on the band.
Totally. And you can hear that difference between like DLR Van Halen and Van Hagar, right? It's like Van Hagar's like completely sounds different, not just the music, like the recording is very much a blues pop recording. And I think that Nick's approach with that is in line with us. And the fact that he doesn't allow us to go too hard down the... If we have a song, for example, that's like kind of Black Crowes-y,
right.
He'll make sure we don't record it exactly the way they do, which might dismay us during the process a little because we're like, but it doesn't sound like what I love, but it sounds like us. And
I mean, listen, I'll say that's very smart because if you end up being the next Black Crowes, well, people are just going to say, oh, well, they're the poor man's Black Crowes, and that doesn't do you any good. You want people to say, no, they're Dirty Honey.
Well, that's it.
It's tough when you're in our position because apart from the fact that I'm way worse at drums than Corey, that's actually one of the problems with my demos too. Like I said, if it's an AC/DC type idea, it just straight up sounds kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's still work to get it to where it's
okay. And once it goes through everybody's like check mark, I guess, it usually winds up sounding like Dirty Honey.
Yeah.
I think we've achieved that so far. And Nick's the last link in that chain and he's done a great job at it.
Well, you know, look at all the shit that Greta Van Fleet takes for wanting to be Zeppelin. I mean, you guys are paving your own path and you're not taking shit. You're actually getting support. So
you're nice.
I really like that band.
Yeah.
But I am proud of the fact that if somebody, you know, whenever you go on and look at comments or whatever, people will be like, there's like 30 different comparisons that we get. You know, versus
one.
Yeah.
And I don't knock them for that at all. They're making great blues based rock and roll to me that I'm totally cool with. But we have run into people that know them really well. And, you know, I think that's something that they're trying to get away from a little bit, which is cool. You know, they gotta find their path and find themselves. And I think they are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, I don't think they're doing anything that's not authentic to them.
No.
And neither are we. And at the end of the day, that's really all you can do. So.
No, and especially in the rock world, you can see when people are being fake as fuck, whereas if they're actually doing it and legitimizing it, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm cool. I'm totally cool with them doing their thing. It's fine.
I don't want to get into the whole rock is dead debate because I think that's completely silly. But in terms of putting a rock band together and starting in this field, it probably would be easier if you were a pop band or if you were, you know, you had more keyboards or had more whatever. Talk to me a little bit about the decision to play this style of music rather than take your talents and go be, you know, another Weekend or a Post Malone or you know, be something completely different that would sell easier.
I mean, it goes back to what I just said. It's not authentic to
right. What
That's we are. I mean, I genuinely, he did some sideman gigs. He's a really accomplished guitarist and he's good.
John's a good looking dude. He could easily hop on stage and tour with Ariana Grande or somebody, you know, he's got the looks, got the talent. I mean,
he's totally good.
Yeah.
I can't do that. Nobody's hiring me as a background singer for anything. He's been on a gig with me where I literally, we're doing a gig, where I was the front man for the first couple songs of this orchestral rock thing that we did at a couple cities around the country. And then they were like, Mark, sing, you have the third on this harmony. And I don't fucking know what that even means.
The fuck is that?
And John was looking
over. Is that the Michael Anthony part or what?
It probably is. But
yeah, exactly.
He would look over at me during the gig and I'm just like pantomiming, like pretending to do backgrounds. And he's just cracking up.
We're on stage. So funny. You know, it wasn't a decision. Like I said, it wasn't a decision to be like this. It was, you know, this is what comes natural to us. I feel really lucky that the moment has come for what we do,
right,
to be celebrated. And we found somebody who, you know, could usher us there in our manager, who is not only, you know, a whale in terms of his history, but he loves the band and he loves rock and roll. And he's always been a rock guy. He's a diehard rock guy. He's like, I wouldn't know what to do with a pop album. He's like, I don't know those people. And he knows who he needs to know. And
he's a fan of the music first, which I say to people all the time is, if
it's the hugest thing.
The people that are working with you aren't passionate about the music you're making, then they're not going to be able to help you very much.
Well, that's even in our jobs, you know, it's like Mitch and I don't interview anybody that I'm not a fan of. It's like,
what are you going to do? You know, like, hey, yeah, man, let me, you know, like, so you were,
yeah, you know. That's it. Oh, and so
he,
yeah.
You know, he's sort of more of the true, like, he's like rock and roll is what I do. And so where the three of us, you know, in the band side of it, you know, to, like I said, we're all talented musicians. It's not weird to say that, but like, we could all get gigs. And so we chose to keep the lights on with that. But fortunately, I think we were the three guys who didn't succeed very well at that. So we were around and we really wanted to do this. And with him being sort of like the tent pole of the.
So what you're saying is that Mark can't get a job anywhere else and you three are just sort of helping him pay the bills.
No. Yeah, you can print that. No.
That's what I'm hearing. It's like, this poor guy can't work without us, so we have to sort of stick around.
He got his money elsewhere.
I knew my lane. And
yeah, exactly.
I didn't, honestly, like, I fought with them a lot early on. I was like, why aren't we doing – there was this sort of push and pull happening where I was trying to get them to play this more blues-based rock thing and stop trying to reinvent the rock wheel, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you also got to like sing a little bit more melodically because just singing the blues isn't going to get us anywhere. So
we went like this, and we were sort of disagreeing. And then it all just kind of came together.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And it came back. And the best part is where it came together is like, it's like, we're all right. We're right at home.
Totally at home.
You know? And so where we're at now too, as a band creatively, everything, it's like, we're actually at the best. It's like, and they all. I couldn't ask for a better timing. You know, during the worst parts of the journey, it's very frustrating. But now that it's where it's at, I wouldn't change a thing.
You know? Right. Oh, you guys just seem really happy and stoked, and like you're having a blast making this music. And I think that's what it's all about at the end of the day. So
yeah, right. You know, and then I hope that radiates.
Yeah. Well, it comes through the music. I'll tell you that. I can feel it.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's all about having a good time, and you know, we didn't get into this to be fucking miserable all the time. So.
That's your soundbite. Yeah. We didn't get into this to have a bad time.
We didn't get into this to have a bad time.
Yeah.
And right. I know you guys prefer Van Hagar over Van Halen, so that's good.
Whoa. What's up that?
Whoa.
That was just the vibe I was getting. It's okay.
No.
The other way.
I believe he said when Sammy came in the band, it was a whole different sound, and it sounded like there was a lot of praise going on there.
Hold on a second. Hold on.
Uh-oh, he's running off to get something. But
I think Van Halen 1 is one of the best albums.
Boom! Right there.
Okay, but here's the thing. That's the return of Ted Templeman.
That's a good record.
That's the album.
That's like Van Halen.
Four Unlawful Carnal.
That's Van Halen, R. Hagar.
Dude, Van Halen's best album of all time, hands down. I will debate it until the cows come home.
Yeah. We'll debate that with you till the cows come home.
You can't beat one. There's no way you can't beat one.
One is one of the greatest pieces of rock and roll work that exists.
You can't beat one, dude. And you can't beat 1984.
He's a Hagar guy.
But I'm telling you, that's the return of the DLR producer.
I have 11 ways that you can beat Van Halen 1. Right here.
Going hard.
You gotta say going hard to the net.
Oh, okay. Right. Right. My bad.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
and,
there you go.
And you can't. Well, speaking of this, Van Hagar, California Dreamin', of course, the new single sounds great. And hey,
yeah. So what's the deal with the album? Do you have an album release date? Because I can't find that anywhere. Even in the press release, it doesn't have like a date.
Yeah.
April 23rd.
Yeah.
Over a month. Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Times. It's gonna be great. And then we'll get you on the road, and then we'll get a second one, hopefully. I mean, so let me just quickly ask you, in terms of the plan, now that the first one's out, do you sort of say, okay, we got to get another one out in 2022 and sort of stoke the fires, or do you do the whole 2 year touring on the one album?
Dude, this guy was asking me for riffs like a week after we got out of the studio.
Good, he should. Yeah. That's his job.
I was like, dude, it's Christmas. Just give me a break here. I felt like I just birthed a child. I was like,
yeah, but Mark, God forbid you bring a melody in. Why does the guitar player always have to be the guy?
We always have a little bit of a competition going on because I love playing guitar and.
Right. Everybody wants to do. I want to play drums.
He wants to play guitar.
Two guys who are trying to be like, oh, check out my guitar riff. You know, I got to do a lot here, man. My life's stressful.
But I'm just
I'm just wondering, are they replacing the drummer or the guitar player first? I mean,
it's going to be Mark on guitar, me on drums, and on guitar.
It's going to be a three piece at some point.
Yeah. It'll be the Dirty Honey, the rotation tour.
Yeah, trust me. There's been many drunk nights at clubs in LA where we just come back for the third set on some shit gig and we just decide he's playing drums, Corey's singing, I'm on guitar. Justin's still on bass.
Yeah.
They cover Van Hagar tunes.
He's lefty, he can't switch.
Justin's just miserable.
Yeah.
No, but yeah,
by the way. I'm going to ask you this. In the press release, I love this. It says about Mark. So normally when you're talking about a lead singer, we're talking about music and all that. But for you, it says he loves clothes, John Varvatos and Nick Fouquet hats especially.
Exclusively. Is that why you're wearing that? Change that.
No, this is actually, it's actually a local Montreal hat maker. And I don't wear Nick Fouquet, okay? I wear Lone Hawk. You got to support a rock and roll brand.
Yeah, I know Lone Hawk. He just doesn't put a liner in his sweatband. In his hat.
Right, yeah.
But talk to me about this. Is there an obsession with clothing? Because I mean, you don't get a press release with Gene Simmons going, you know, he wears Karl Lagerfeld or whatever.
Mitch, listen, Mitch, I'm going to answer for Mark, okay?
The Simmons press release just literally has a catalog of all the Kiss shit you can buy.
Yeah. You want to be buried in a Kiss coffin?
Yeah.
Gene's got it for you.
Mitch, David Lee Roth once said, it's not what you're like, it's how you look doing it.
Blue shirt, like Terry Kath.
We all love fashion. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
But he also said, he goes, I wanted to be the art project, not wear it. But I also feel, I think inwardly, I feel a kinship to Eddie, where it's just like, Eddie was like, I was just reading about the difference of him and Sammy. It's like, Sammy rolls up, his socks are ironed. You know, they're meeting for the first time. His crease is perfect. He's got slacks.
Yeah.
He's looking great. He's like, I think I might want to be in Van Halen. And Eddie's like, in the pants he's been wearing for the past 4 days. You know, crappy shoes, like a t-shirt. It doesn't get much better on stage, especially. I sort of wish I could do that inwardly, but you know.
Yeah. Coming from the guitar player that's wearing a $3,500 John Varvatos leather jacket right now.
Well, this thing rubs off, dude, you know? It rubs off. And he runs out and I'm like, this is pretty dope. You know,
this guy's got a good eye, man.
He does. Do you have the Varvatos discount card, by the way? Just asking because Jerry may want to go shopping with you.
Yeah, I need that VIP card.
Anything you hit me up, I got you.
We'll go shopping together.
No, I'm dead serious. If you need anything, I got you.
Sweet, good to know.
No, it has rubbed off, and it's. I love looking good. It's great, but at the same time, you know, I love just wearing a pair of crappy jeans, some old Air Jordan ones, and you know,
Air Jordan ones.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Do you guys wear the pointy boots? Like, do you wear the Jeffrey West boots, like the struts?
No. Oh yeah.
Oh, nice. Look at those.
Commercials, right? Yeah.
Little Chelsea's. Can't beat them. I have similar ones upstairs.
No, we don't wear the pointy struts. They're a little colorful for my personal taste.
Mm.
They wear a lot of like pinks and whites and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, a little. Depends on the tour.
They're like mildly glamish in their
look. Rock and roll fashion. It looks cool. What could he say?
They can get away with it for sure.
I want to see who's going to be able to pull off one of those leotards that like Freddie Mercury wore, and actually also DLR wore, where it's like open all the way.
Cup.
There's a cup. Yeah, let's see that guy.
Big bush sticking out.
Who's going to do that?
Rick.
John, it should be you. Why not?
I get just a few more crunches, and then I'll send you a pic.
That's it. Mitch, we'll get Mitch in a leotard next time we do an interview.
Where are you guys right now, Mitch? Are you in Montreal? Or?
Both of us are in Montreal, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. About 20 minutes away.
The situation there is not going so hot.
No. We're falling behind, and we're still under curfew. But they moved it to 9:30 now, so look at us.
What does that look like in Canada? You're under curfew? Like, I don't...
Well, they literally, if you're outside after, it was up on, it was 8 o'clock until yesterday. And if you were outside, they give you a $1,550 fine.
What?
Yeah.
What does that do? A curfew?
You have to be in your house by 8 o'clock.
But it basically, it prevents you from being exposed to it. That's the whole gist. Because
you're not running around at a party or having a rave at in your fucking garage, you know?
Like senseless. It's like taking away the extra senseless gatherings. Like
pretty much.
Right.
Fine, but like, wow.
Right. And all the businesses had to close at 7:30. So it's not like you can sit there and say, well, I work at McDonald's, so that's why I'm still out at 10 o'clock. They went, nah, everything's closed at 7:30. You need to be in your house by 8. So
yeah. And you can't even get a meal. If you don't have any food in your house, say it's a midnight, you're fucking starving. You can't get a meal until the curfew wraps up in the morning.
How long has that been going on, that situation?
70 days. 70 days.
So it was relieved, and then it went back to that.
No, we've been under curfew. And all they did is that now it's 9:30 instead of 8.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy shit.
Just like adults. What they're really saying is you're all children, and you need rules.
Correct. And you can't take care of yourself. And
Pretty much.
Listen, I don't understand why I can't go to a Tim Hortons at 10 o'clock and get a coffee, because it's me and my car. It's not exactly like, anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
Old man yells at cloud. Anyways, running out of time, so we'll wrap up. Dirty Honey, brand new record coming out April 23rd. Get it wherever music is sold. Make sure you buy the CD, get the vinyl, because when you go see them at the show, they can't sign your Spotify. Got to have the CD.
That's a great one. I love that.
Can't sign the Spotify.
Sure. All right, Mark, John, it's a pleasure. And John, next time we'll talk more about guitars and stuff.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
It's a rock and roll interview all about fashion. Brilliant.
Perfect, as it should be.
Always a pleasure seeing you guys. Thank you again, Mitch. And
always a pleasure.
Obviously, too. We'll hopefully see you guys sooner than later.
Hopefully in Montreal at a nice live show. That would be great.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
In fact, Dirty Honey was one of the first ones that was canceled. On the you were supposed to be here in
rolling through in April, I think.
April.
Yeah,
where were you supposed to be, at the Metropolis, MTELUS, or
yeah. You guys were playing one of the big clubs over here, like the top venue before the arena, and
yeah,
and it was like 2 weeks away and it got canceled. It was like, oh
yeah.
Was that
headlining?
I think
so.
I believe it was headlining.
I think we played MTELUS before too.
Well, yeah, we can't thank you guys enough too. We've been on the Spotify artist page and stuff, and Montreal comes up as like a top 10 city. You know, obviously it's not nearly as New York, Chicago, and LA, but it's way up there in our most streams.
Absolutely,
good.
Thank you.
We'll have a big hang next time you're in town, so we'll have fun.
We're down.
All right.
Cheers. Cool.
Cheers. Thank you.
See you later, guys.
Bye bye now.
The Jeremy White Podcast. Tuesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Available wherever you get your podcasts.